Yeah, we're holding on page 90 in Ksubos, Ois Mem Gimel. The end of the Masechta talks about a couple of cases where a husband wants to live in one place and a wife wants to live in another place, and what that does in terms of under what circumstances, who has the upper hand in the various cases, and if they can't reconcile, then what does that do in terms of their marriage? So the Mishnah mentions you can have a case where they were living in where, for example, they were living in not such a nice place, and now they want to move to a nicer place. So the Mishnah had mentioned that the Mishnah had mentioned that Hanova Hayofa, a nicer place, a nicer house, or a nicer neighborhood, Boydik, it checks, or it tests a person. So what does this t what does that mean, that it tests a person? So the Gemara says, Omar Shmuel, because it's like what Shmuel says, Shinui vest tchivas chole me'ayim. When a person changes their routine or their habits, their eating habits or whatever, then it's the beginning of stomach aches. So now, in other words, they're going to be living in a different place. They're going to be living in a nicer neighborhood or a nicer house or whatever. They're going to be having different a different daily schedule, different different diet, etc. And therefore, it can cause. So therefore it can test a person's it can test a person's health basically, and therefore there's reason to say that maybe one of them shouldn't, well, maybe the husband, for example, shouldn't be able to unilaterally tell his wife we're moving to that place without her having some say in the matter. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Kosev b'Sefer ben Sira. It says in Sefer Ben Sira. We've talked about Sefer Ben Sira before. It's a book from the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. Some say that it is brought in some places that the author was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. The guy was a chacham. He didn't have Ruach HaKodesh or anything, which is why it's not part of the Kisvei HaKodesh. But it's a book. Eventually, the chachamim did not like people reading it for a variety of reasons. So over time, the original of it got lost. So for hundreds of years, all they had was a Greek translation of it. Eventually, they discovered in the Cairo Gniza and in various other places, they discovered large parts of it. A lot of it is written in the style of Sefer Mishlei. A lot of it is admonitions to a person about how to live his life properly. Anyway, so Sefer Ben Sira quotes like this. The pasuk says, first of all, starting with a pasuk in Mishlei that says Kol Yemei Ani Royim, all the days of a poor person are bad. So you have to ask, says Ben Sira, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says, but consider, tovim. What about, you can say, all the days of a poor person are bad because he has very little to eat. But on Shabbos, and what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? He has better food to eat. Shouldn't he have a better time of it then? And the answer is Kiddush Shmuel. And the answer is, along the lines of what Shmuel says, Dama Shmuel Shinui Vest Chilas Chol Me'ayim, same point. In other words, given that on weekdays, he's eating only very meager food, and then all of a sudden on Shabbos and Yom Tov, he's eating richer food, so that's going to give him stomach aches and then health problems, and therefore, in that sense, then can truly be said Kol Yemei Ani Royim.
That's what we say. Gesunter Arman.
That's why we say what?
Gesunter
Arman. Yeah, there's an expression they say in Yiddish, a gesunter Arman, literally means a healthy poor person, but it means somebody who is so poor that he can't really afford good food for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So therefore, yeah, he's healthy because he doesn't have this shinui vest on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There is a vort on it, by the way, that this is one reason why we should taste the Shabbos food on Erev Shabbos. That avoids that problem, because then that way on Shabbos, you're not having the shinui ves. There is also an interesting vort. There is also an interesting vort that's brought from the Baal Shem Tov on this. The Oni over here is the person who doesn't have proper kavana in davening, so it's not so good for him. The question is then, so what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? At least then he's not working, so maybe he has more time to be mechaven. The answer is fine. Then he does, but then he starts feeling gaiva. Look how good I concentrated on davening today, and that's also not so good for him. Here's another. So Ben Sira Omer. So Ben Sira Omer Af Leilas. So on top of that, Ben Sira points out that also it's not, when we say Kol Yemei Ani Royim, Ben Sira adds not just the days but also the nights of a poor person are bad. Why? The Shval Gagim Gago. This poor person has his roof is lower than everybody else's roofs because he's poor. He can't afford to build a nice big size house. So therefore his roof is the lowest one. And on the other hand, his vineyard is on the highest mountains, because again, the soil is of lesser quality over there. So if he's going to be able to afford a vineyard, where is he going to be able to afford one? Only there. The result is mimatar gagim legagoi. The rain from all the other roofs is constantly pouring onto his roof, because it's lower than theirs. So therefore, so it bothers him, and then it bothers him, and then keeps him up, and whatever, even by night. Or may afar kamri lekrumim, and the dust from his vineyard ends up going to other vineyards, because when he fertilizes it, it rolls downhill. Even the topsoil itself gets washed away by wind and rain and whatever. So therefore, so even by night, even when he's not actually managing these things, and nevertheless he has these effects that are coming from other people's houses and from his vineyard to other people's vineyards. Now, so the Mishnah goes on to talk about, what about you have a case where the husband wants to, where one member of the couple, the husband or the wife, wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, wants to move from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah says, HaKol Malin, anybody can cause that their family is going to go up to Eretz Yisrael, but not the reverse. And then within Eretz Yisrael itself, from other places in Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. So that leads the Gemara now into a long discussion about the greatness of living in Eretz Yisrael, and the various pros and cons all about it. We'll have over here those who nowadays hold that Yishuv Haaretz, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, will find plenty in this Gemara to support that. Those who say that you shouldn't are also going to find plenty in this Gemara to support it. So the Gemara starts off. In this connection, by the way, worth mentioning to start with, actually a cute story from Sipur Chasidim, also speaking of the Baal Shem Tov, where one time there's a chosan and kala getting married, and while the chuppah is going on, there's a bird sitting over there on a branch and chirping, and the Baal Shem Tov turns to his talmidim and he says, this bird is saying lo ela techolik haaretz. None of his talmidim had any idea what that means. Years passed. Eventually, what happened is this couple decided, and they were getting older. One of them, I think it was the husband, decided he wants to move to Eretz Yisrael and live out the rest of his life there. The wife didn't want to, or it was the other way around, whatever it was. One wanted to go, the other one didn't. They went to Beis Din Paskin, that nowadays, now here we're going to here we here the Mishnah says HaKol Malin LaEretz Yisrael, but not necessarily does that apply nowadays for reasons that we'll talk about in a second. So the decision of the Beis Din was that she's entitled to a get. And then whichever one of them wants to go and live in Eretz Yisrael can do so. So now the Talmidim understood, La'elot Techolik Ha'aretz, Eretz Yisrael is going to divide between these two. Now, with this said, that we're saying that that we're saying that there's that a kol malin la'aretz Yisrael, Tosfos actually brings from Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen, who says maybe not necessarily. Now, since there are many mitzvahs at tluyos ba'aretz and it's hard to keep them nowadays, then maybe there's not a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe you can't say a kol malin la'aretz Yisrael anymore. There's a vast amount of discussion, first of all, about whether that's a valid point. For one thing, the other Rishonim, the later Rishonim, who usually discuss things that Tosfos have to say, never bring this point from Rabbeinu Chaim, so maybe even it was added to Tosfos later, maybe it's not the part of the original part of Tosfos. Besides that, what do you mean? It's not like you can't learn the mitzvahs of tluyos ba'aretz and keep them. So there's quite a bit of discussion about that point, about whether the din that the Mishnah mentions applies nowadays. Anyway, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, la'olam yadur adam be'eretz Yisrael, a person should always live in Eretz Yisrael, afilo be'ir sheruva ovid kechavim, even if he's going to live in a city of mostly goyim. Better than rather than living in Chutz La'aretz, even in a city that's mostly Jews. So a practical reason behind it, the Meiri gives a practical point. He says, even you living in a city of mostly Jews, nonetheless, you're still living in a larger Goyish culture of that country. So some of it is going to end up infiltrating. So in that sense, then you're better off in Eretz Yisrael, even if the particular city you live in is Ruba Goyim, but the country as a whole is the country as a whole is mostly Jews. Now, whether that applies in times nowadays, you have again that Eretz Yisrael is, if not majority Jews, at least a substantial percentage. But for hundreds of years, it wasn't the case. Whether that concept applies in that time was also part of the argument. Bechlal, there's an argument anyway. Is there an actual mitzvah nowadays to live in Eretz Yisrael? The Rambam doesn't list it as one of the 613 mitzvahs. And there's a vast amount of discussion. Why not? Does that mean that Rambam holds it's not a mitzvah nowadays? Does he hold maybe it's only a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Does he hold maybe it is a mitzvah, but it's included in other mitzvahs? The Rambam gives one of the Rambam's rules, for example, he writes in the beginning of Sefer HaMitzvahs, is that he doesn't include as a separate mitzvah something that's a prerequisite for another mitzvah. So maybe he considers living in Eretz Yisrael as a prerequisite for a couple of dozen mitzvahs, therefore he doesn't count it as a mitzvah of its own. So there's quite a, the, and then the Ramban, actually, now the Ramban, The Ramban in at the end of Sefer HaMitzvot, he has a list of mitzvahs that, in his opinion, the Rambam left out. He has a number of things. You know, everybody agrees, of course, that there are 248 esses and 365 lois esses, but there's individual mitzvahs where the Rambam listed something as a mitzvah, and different other Rishonim hold that it shouldn't have been counted as a separate mitzvah for one reason or another. So the Ramban has a number of objections like that against the Rambam, and he gives at the end he gives a list of mitzvahs esses and mitzvahs lois esses that, in his opinion, are needed in order to fill in the count. One of them is among his mitzvahs, I say, is the mitzvah v'hirashtim asaretz v'yishavtim bo, that there's a mitzvah to settle in Eretz Yisrael. So according to the Rambam, it's definitely one of the 613. According to the Rambam, it's not, but what that means that the Rambam didn't count it is questionable in itself. Anyway. The Ramban himself, in his old age, moved to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, he had lived most of his life in Spain. But after he had to leave there because of the hostility of the church officials against him, so he decided, you know what, he if he's going to move anywhere, he should move to Eretz Yisrael, and he did. By the way, he accomplished it, even though he was only there a couple of years, he accomplished a tremendous amount in those couple of years. First of all, the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael in the Ramban's times had been almost had almost gone extinct. There had been invasions of various kinds. Only a few years earlier, there had been an invasion by the Mongols that had destroyed large parts of Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban really revitalized the Kehillah over there. To this very day, you have the Ramban's shul in the old city that goes back to that time. But in addition, also the Ramban, and we find in various places in his Pirush, where he was able to find out certain details of meanings of things in Torah that he didn't know until then, as by actually traveling around Eretz Yisrael and observing things. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Shekol hador be'Eretz Yisrael. Anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael, doima kamisha yesh lo elaka. Then he appears as though he has a god. Somebody who lives in Chutz La'aretz, it appears as though he doesn't have a god. What does that mean? We'll explain in a second. Because the Pasuk says that Hashem says, I'm going to give you Eretz Kanaan to be for you a god. So implying, in other words, a person only truly has Hashem when he's in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, "V'chiv kol mi she'ein ador be'Eretz Yisrael ba'aretz ein le'elaka." Are you literally saying that somebody who doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael doesn't have a god? Ella, no. What it means is loy malach kol ador b'chutz la'aretz ki'ilu oved avodas kechavim. Rather, what it means is if he lives in chutz la'aretz, it's as if he's worshiping avodah zarah. So, in other words, what's the difference? Maharsha points out like this: Hashem, of course, rules over the whole world. Nonetheless, Hashem does have a special connection with Eretz Yisrael. Hashem is even called in some places Elokei ha'aretz. So therefore, so we're saying that when a person, so first the Gemara had said that when a person is living outside Eretz Yisrael, it's as if he doesn't have a god. But then the Gemara is saying, what do you mean? The fact is, Hashem still rules over the whole world. But it means, in other words, it's as if he's worshiping Avodah Zarah, as if he's saying, in other words, like, so to speak, I'll worship Hashem together with some other power, Rahman al-Islam. V'chein b'David hu omer. Now that we find a similar thing that David says, he's talking about during the time when he's running away from Shaul, and at one point he feels it's not safe in Eretz Yisrael anymore, and he has to run away to the land of the Plishtim. Mind you, the land of the Plishtim is actually part of Eretz Yisrael, la halacha, but still at this point it was ruled over by the Plishtim, and David complains, and he says, "Kigershuni hayoyim, they're expelling me today, meistapeach b'nachlas Hashem, from joining in to the heritage of Hashem, lemer, and they're telling me, lechavod elokim acherim, go worship other gods." Now, mi amaloi the David, lechavod elokim acherim. In all of the stories of David, where do you ever find anybody telling him, go worship Avodah Zarah? Ela loy malach kol ador b'chutz la'aretz. So he's saying, anybody who lives in chutz la'aretz, ki la'ovid avodas kechavim, is as if he's worshiping Avodah Zarah, because he doesn't have that close connection with Hashem anymore. Now, there's a lot of discussion what exactly this means. One point is precisely that point. Since you have all the mitzvahs atluyos ba'aretz outside Eretz Yisrael, there are a significant number of mitzvahs that we can't keep. Aside from that, also, in fact, there is an idea that Rishonim bring that really primarily the Torah was given to be kept in Eretz Yisrael. To a certain extent, when we keep mitzvahs outside Eretz Yisrael, it's almost more in some ways like a zecher of the fact. Rashi mentions it, for example, in the parasha of Vehoyim Shemaya, he brings from Sifri that we wear tefillin, we wear tzitzis, whatever, so that we should remember when we come back to Eretz Yisrael, that we should remember these mitzvahs and not have forgotten them during the long galus. But in other words, in the sense that when we're keeping mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz, in a certain sense, that we're doing it like it's the second best way of doing it. So there's that point. There's the point that when we live in Eretz Yisrael, we're under Hashem. We're directly connected with Hashem, as opposed, we get our hashpah directly from Hashem, as opposed to in other countries we're getting it through the 70 sorim, through the sorim of the respective nations, and that's tantamount to avodah zarah in a certain sense. So with all of that, then you have that that consideration. By the way, when we say over here, we're saying that the first version of the Gemara, we had said that when he lives in Eretz Yisrael, doime k'mishi yesh lo elaka, it appears as though he has a god. What do you mean he appears? He has a god, period. So the Rif over here explains that what it means is, in other words, let's say, he's living in Chutz La'aretz. So he's not keeping the mitzvahs at Tluyas Ba'aretz because he can't. They don't apply over there. So people are going to think that he's not accepting Hashem's malchus on him. Now, when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and people see that he's keeping Trumas and Maestris and all those other dinim of Mitzvahs at Lois Baretz, then it's obvious to people that he does have a God. That's what it means, doime. Not it appears as though, but he doesn't really, but on the contrary, now it appears to everybody who sees him that in fact he has a God to whom he's listening. The Gemara continues. Reb Zera have a kamishtamet minei de Reb Yehuda. Reb Zera was trying to avoid Reb Yehuda, who was his Rebbe, de boi lemesak l'Eretz Yisrael. Now Reb Zera wanted to go up to Eretz Yisrael, and he was trying to avoid his Rebbe, Reb Yehuda. De Amar Reb Yehuda, kol ha'olam mibavel l'Eretz Yisrael, over be'ese. Because Reb Yehuda said, anybody who goes up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael is over on a mitzvah sase. So therefore, in other words, Reb Zera is afraid that if he actually sees Reb Yehuda, and Reb Yehuda gets wind of the fact that he wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, he's going to tell him outright, don't. And Reb Zera, being Reb Yehuda's Talmud, is not going to disobey his Rebbe. So he was trying to avoid him, trying to evade him, in order that he should be able to leave without Reb Yehuda actually knowing of it. Now, why does Rabbi Huda say, now, and the Gemara actually mentions in other places, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos that Reb Zera actually managed at one point before he left Bavel, he actually managed to overhear one last halacha from Rabbi Huda before he set forth. There's a lot of things, a lot of different Gemaras that talk about different things that Reb Zera did before and during his journey. We're going to have another one of them at the end of Ar Masechta, when he crossed the last river that he needed to cross to get into Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions elsewhere he didn't even think of moving to Eretz Yisrael until he had a dream that represented to him that his Averis had been forgiven. And there's a variety of different things that he didn't take on this decision lightly. Anyway, so why does Rav Yehuda say that if somebody goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, there's Oivran and Eser? Shenema, because the Pasuk says, the Navi Yumiya says shortly before, Bavela Yuvau, they will be brought to Bavel, Veshama Yiyu, and that's where they will be, Ad Yom Pokti Oysam, until the day that I remember them, Ne'um Hashem. So says Hashem. So Rav Yehuda says, that means, in other words, Hashem has decided that we're to be in Bavel. So therefore, so until we're told otherwise, then we have to stay in Bavel. Now, Tosfos points out that pasuk is talking about before Churban Bayis Rishon. Now, on the face of it, Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Zera are living long after Churban Bayis Sheni. At this point, we're in a different Golos. At this point, we're in Golos Edom. So, who says the pasuk is referring to that? Also, Tosfos says apparently the pasuk is telling us also when it comes to the second Golos. Now, there was when Golos Bavel was over, the Nevi'im were telling the Jews in Bavel, come, leave Bavel, and come to Eretz Yisrael. But nevertheless, Tosfos understands that once they didn't, once the as it turned out, many of them stayed behind in Bavel, and in the end there was a Churban Bayis Sheni, and there was a Golos. Then that din, that what we learn from the pasuk that they have to remain in Bavel, Rabbi Yehuda holds is still in effect. Now the Gemara is going to point out so the Gemara points out Rabbi Yehuda, now Rabbi Zera. So what does Rabbi Zera answer to that? He says Ahu b'klei shoris k'siv. That pasuk is not talking about the Jews at all. It's talking about the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, that they were brought to Bavel. The different waves of them were brought to Bavel. One set of kelim were brought from the Beis Hamikdash to Bavel 11 years before the Churban, when Yechoniah and his people were taken into Golos. So now the context is that Yirmiyah is saying there were people in Yerushalayim and there were false Nevi'im who are claiming that soon Nebuchadnezzar is going to be overthrown and everybody's going to be coming back. Yirmiyah says, no, it's not so. Those Kalim are staying there for quite a while yet. Eventually, when they started getting ready to build the second Beis Mikdash, then they were brought back. Anyway, so Reb Zera says nothing to do with Jews having to stay in Babel. Now, Marchaux points out that the fact is that since we have to understand that we have to understand that the Yumi is not just telling us a fact, he's telling us some kind of tzivui. So if he's just talking about the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, then if he's just talking about the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, then he's not commanding anything. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda preferred to understand that it's an actual commandment of Yirmiyah in Hashem's name to remain in Bavel, and therefore, necessarily, therefore, that has to be referring to the people. Rabbi Zadok could argue with his Rebbe, he wouldn't argue with him to his face, but yeah, he's entitled to learn the pasuk to learn the meaning of the pasuk differently. So the Gemara continues with Rav Yehuda. So what does Rav Yehuda answer to that? It is a fair point that the pasuk is actually referring in context to the Kalim. Why is Rav Yehuda taking it out of context and saying that it's referring to the Jewish people? The answer is Ksiv Kra Achrina, because Rav Yehuda says you have a different pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and once we see that pasuk in Shir HaShirim, then we're going to understand that that and the pasuk in Yirmiyah are telling us the same thing. The pasuk says, "Yishibaiti eschem benos, I've made you swear, daughters of Yerushalayim, meaning the Jewish people, bitzvaos, by the deer, or by hasada, or by the gazelles of the field." And the pasuk continues, "Im to'iru, that you shouldn't arouse and you shouldn't try to wake up the love of Hashem to the Jewish people until Hashem is ready. So, in other words, basically, the pasuk is saying that don't try to force the issue and come to Eretz Yisrael on your own. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that putting those two psukim together, you see that therefore you have to understand the pasuk in Yirmiyah as referring to the people, because you have the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which we understand is telling us the same point. So for Rabbi Zeira, what does Rabbi Zeira answer to that? He says, "Ahu shalo yalu Yisrael b'choyma." That pasuk in Shir HaShirim is telling us that the Jewish people can't come up like a wall to come up altogether, the Yod Chazaka, to force their way out of Golos and come up. That they can't do, says Reb Zeira. That would be a violation of this Hishbaiti Eschem from Shir HaShirim. But to come up as individuals, like Reb Zeira himself is doing, no problem. Vir of Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, Yishbaiti achrinah k'siv. Sure, but it says the word, it says this pasuk, Yishbaiti Eschem, another place in Shir HaShirim. So therefore, we can understand that it means that one of them is telling us they shouldn't go en masse in a large group, b'yod chazaka, and another one is telling us that individuals shouldn't be going either. In fact, Marashah says historically we're calling this b'choyma, and in fact historically we find in Sefer Nehemiah, in Sefer Ezra Nehemiah, that when Nehemiah got permission from the king from Dariush to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim, in fact the local goyim and kusim and other troublemakers or whatever were telling him, "Ala melech atam murdim, you're trying to rebel against the king building the wall over here," and Nehemiah has to explain to him that we're doing it with the reshus of the king, because in other words the point is this Tovia Ha'eved Harmoni is called in the pasuk over there, would have a valid point. If they're coming up and doing it by force, then it would be a violation of this pasuk, because they're coming up b'choyma. They're coming up in a large group in order to force the rebuilding of the walls of Yerushalayim. Okay. Anyway, so again, Rabbi Yehuda says you have twice where it says Hishbaiti Eschem. Therefore, one tells us that they shouldn't come up as a large group fighting against the goyim, and the other Rabbi Yehuda says means that we shouldn't could be coming up individually either. V'Rab Zeira, what does Rab Zeira answer to that? He says, "Ahumi boyle l'chidur Rab Yosi b'Chanina." He says we have to learn these psukim, we have to use these psukim the way that Rab Yosi b'Chanina learned them. There are actually three shvors, three times in the Psukim in Shir HaShirim, it says this expression, Ishbaiti Eschem, Benois Yerushalayim, Bitzvoi, said Ba'ilos HaSadeh. There's actually a fourth one as well, but Marashah points out that one doesn't mention anything about Tzvoi, so Ailos HaSadeh. It just says, Hishbaiti Eschem Benois Yerushalayim, that this is the Jewish people saying metaphorically to the nations of the world, Im Timtzu Es Dodi, if you find my beloved one, Hashem, Mata Giduloi, what are you going to tell him? Shecholas Ava Oni, I'm sick with love for him, and I desperately want to be close to him. So that has nothing to do with the, that has nothing to do with the with going or not going to Eretz Yisrael. But you have three other times in the Pesukim in Shir HaShirim where it says this is Shabbat Yeschem Benos Yerushalayim. And by the way, when it says the Gemara doesn't specify it over here, or at least it's not here in Ein Yaakov. But the Medrash mentions on it that what is this mention of Tzvoris of Ailas HaSadeh, that Hashem is saying if you violate these Shavuos, then you're going to be like deer or like gazelles, which are free for the taking, free for prey for any wild animals or hunters or what have you. Meaning in other words that what Parshat say, and that if we go and violate these shavuos, then we're endangering the Jewish people. The Medrash actually mentions in that connection that there were several times when they tried to force things, and each time it ended in disaster. Anyway. So three times it says, what's the business with these, why these three shavuos? One is, like we said, they shouldn't come up en masse like a wall and fight their way out of Golos. Another one is Hashem beswore the Jewish people not to rebel against the Goyim in general throughout all the time in Golos. The third one was addressed to the Goyim, that they won't oppress the Jewish people more than is appropriate. So therefore says Reb Zera, so fine, you don't have anything over here about individual Jews not being able to go to Eretz Yisrael. You have, we can't go and rebel and put together a large group like Bnei Ephraim or whatever, but not like this where I'm going individually.
This is not keeping their promise.
So now, one second. So first of all, what's the deal with these Sholosh Shavuos? Does it mean literally that Hashem beswore the Jewish people? A number of Rishonim say it's a little hard to say that. We never, other than this Gemara over here, where do we ever find that Hashem gathered the Jewish people or the Goyim together and made them accept such a Shavuah on themselves? So for example, the Rambam talks about it in Igeres Teiman, yeah, the famous Igeres Teiman that he wrote to the Jewish community in Yemen, who were having a bunch of terrible troubles, one on top of the other. They had anti-Semitic rulers, they had a fellow, they had a false Mashiach, they had a bunch of other problems they were having, and the Rambam wrote them a whole letter to strengthen their emunah in Yiddishkeit. And by the way, they were so grateful for it that from then on, they were so grateful for the Rambam's help, that from then on, the Ramban brings in one of his letters, that from then on, as long as for the rest of the Rambam's life, when they said Kaddish there in Yemen, they would say, B'chayechen uv'yemechen uv'chaye demarona Moshe ben Maimon. So Ada Yemazeh, the Teimonim have enormous respect for the Rambam. It's known, for example, that the most accurate Kisvei Yad of Rambam come from Teimon, and many of them actually follow him exclusively for Piskei Halacha. So the Rambam actually explains in that letter that we don't mean literally that there are shavuos. We mean the Gemara is using it in a metaphorical sense. On the other hand, there are Rishonim and Achronim who say that maybe it actually has validity al pi halacha. Maybe it means that Hashem beswore the Malachim in charge of the Umos HaOlam, and then beswore on the Shamas and whatever. Then you also have, yeah, then on the Maharal, by the way, has a whole explanation that he also explains that they're symbolic, and he explains basically that these Shavuos are the three prerequisites that are necessary for Golos to accomplish what it's supposed to. It has to be, in other words, that we're not going to break out of Golos early, as a Shalayalu Yisrael B'choyma, that we're not going to try to fight against the Goyim to mitigate the Golos, because the Eibush to put us in it. And, you know, you have the famous expression that the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe said, Nitmut unze villain, we didn't go into Golos on our own will, and we're not going to come out of it on our own will. And the third one, on the other hand, is that the Goyim won't destroy us in Golos, Rahman al-Islam. So it's like, in other words, these three Shavuos, it's more along the lines. The Maharal says these are the three necessary prerequisites for Golos to actually accomplish fully what it needs to. Anyway, even according to the opinions that the Shavuos are in fact halachically valid and we have to pay attention to them, there are. You just mentioned Menachem. There's an argument that says, listen, the Goyim obviously haven't kept their end of the deal. They certainly have not been not mishtabed in Asiyosimidai. So therefore, we're not necessarily obligated in our end of the deal either. There's an argument that some Gdoli Yisrael made after there was the famous Balfour Declaration in 1917. The British government gave out an official declaration that says that they look with favor on the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. So there was some Gdoli Yisrael at that time who said, no, so in that case, then setting up a state there, then Jews coming in large numbers to Eretz Yisrael and setting up a state is not Yimudu B'Umas HaOlam, because they gave permission. Others said maybe it would be the UN vote. So a huge amount of ink has been spilled on all sides of this question. Famously, on the other hand, everybody knows the Satmar Rebbe, the old Satmar Rebbe, wrote an entire sefer about the Shalosh Shavuos, arguing that they are still very much in effect, and therefore that the whole concept of a state of Israel is invalid. V'cholo v'cholo. There's been enormous amounts of ink spilled on all sides of the question. Anyway. So that's Reb Zera again is saying, so there's nothing in any of these psukim indicating that individual Jews can't go to Eretz Yisrael. Virav Yehuda Amar. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, Im ta'iru v'im ta'oru, k'siv. After all, each of these times when it says, Yishvayti eschem b'nois Yerushalayim, it continues, Im ta'iru, if you will arouse, v'im ta'oru, and if you will wake up. So in other words, it means that in each of these shavuos, there are actually two. So therefore, it's not really three shavuos, it's six. And that can include also that individuals shouldn't be leaving Bavel for Eretz Yisrael. V'Rab Zera, what does Rab Zera answer to that? He says, Miboyle l'chidu Rab Levi. He says, we need those six for what Rab Levi taught us. Dama shisha shavuos halolu lama. Fine, so we have six shavuos. How do we work it out? T'losa hani dam moron. The three that we said so far, that the Jewish people shouldn't go in large numbers to Eretz Yisrael, that they shouldn't rebel against the Goyim, and that the Goyim shouldn't oppress us more than appropriate. Enoch, what are the other three? The first one is that we shouldn't reveal the ketz. The Nevi'im among the Jewish people should not reveal the actual ketz of when Mashiach is going to come. The second one is that we should not distance the ketz. What does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. First one is it means that we shouldn't do averis that are going to push away the ketz further. After all, you may know the famous thing, there's Be'ita and there's Achishena. There's a certain deadline that Hashem has. That's the absolute deadline by which Mashiach has to come. And then there's Achishena, that Hashem can bring Mashiach at any moment in B'kol Tishmo. So we have to be careful not to be doing Averis to push off that that kind of ketz. Then Rashi brings a different Gersa, Shelo Yedachaku as a ketz, which means that we should not force the ketz. So Rashi says, Meloshin Doichak. Rashi says, Shelo yarbu b'tachnunim al-kach yosem yidai. We should not be pleading for the geulah, mitzvah v'shleima, more than appropriate. Now, what does that mean? I mean, so we all grow up learning that we're constantly saying, first of all, I mean, we daven three times a day and more for it. The Medrash has an expression, the Jewish people, everything the Jewish people are always saying is, when already is the Beis Hamikdash going to be built? We as little kids already, we're yelling, we want Mashiach now. The Rebbe dealt with this in many, many sichas and letters. One point is, this Shelo Yedachaku Saketz, the second explanation, means, for example, it would be, for example, to use Kabbalah Mysis, for example, to force Mashiach to come. There's a famous story, for example, of Rabbi Yosef de Lorena, of a great Talmud Chacham in the generation after the expulsion from Spain. He actually tried to do that. Famous story. He got together his Talmudim. They went and captured the Samach Mem and his wife, and they were going to destroy them, and that would force Mashiach to come. And in the end, he made a mistake, and he gave one little thing to one little bit of something to the Samach Mem to sniff, and the whole thing fell apart. It's a fascinating and kind of macabre story. But anyway, so that would be an example of Yedachaku as a ketz. That would be that kind of thing of forcing the ketz with Kabbalah and with things like that. Others say in a similar vein, it would mean, for example, the really high-level tzaddikim are the ones whose tefillahs are always going to be accepted. They're the ones who shouldn't be doichiket more than necessary. So it doesn't mean us regular people whose tefillahs are anyway not so ay-ay-ay as it is. By all means, we should be screaming for Mashiach as much as possible. Anyway, Marsha says another explanation. If we follow the Girsa Yirachaku rather than Yedachaku, it can also mean Faket. Don't think of the Ketz as being far away. Always realize Achakeloi B'chol Yom Shiyovei, Mashiach can come at any moment, and don't think it's something in the far future and it's not something for us to be concerned about. So that's another one. And the third one, the third one is that we shouldn't reveal the secret to the Umas HaOlam. What secret? Rashi gives two explanations. One is it means Soid HaIber, the secrets of how we calculate the Jewish calendar. And back in the time when we were Makadosh al Pi HaRe'iyah, when we have in this week's parasha, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Reish Chodoshim, then we had to keep that information under wraps. Eventually, nowadays we don't have that kind of thing anyway. We are not Makadosh al Pi HaRe'iyah, we're Makadosh al Pi HaCheshbon. So therefore, so the details of the Cheshbon have been published. But up until then, it would have been also to do that. Rashi's second explanation is means the secrets of Torah, that those shouldn't be publicized and made available to the Goyim. Anyway, so Rab Zera says that that's what we have six Shavuos. Again, nothing to do with individuals going to Eretz Yisrael. So that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Zera. So in the end, actually, Rabbi Zera did in fact successfully evade Rabbi Yehuda, and he did end up going to Eretz Yisrael, and we find in many places in the Gemara where he did that. There is an interesting sicha in Chelik Yud Ches, which is also it's a sicha on Parshas Mat on Parshas Maseh on that pasuk, which again, which we said is a machlokus of the Rambam and the Ramban, whether in fact that constitutes a mitzvah saseh. The Rebbe deals with that and also with several other pieces of these Gemaras that we're going to be learning over the next couple of days about this idea that Rabbi Yehuda is saying you can't move from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. One of the questions in the Sicha is even before Rabbi Yehuda's times, Rabbi Yehuda's own Rebbeim, Rav and Shmuel, left Bavel and went to Eretz Yisrael for a while. So what's going on over here? Bechlal, there's two major explanations. And now the Gemara is going to say later on, or we may get to it today, more likely we'll get to it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is that the Gemara is going to say that you're not allowed to leave Bavel to go to other countries. Even according to everybody else who disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to leave Bavel for other countries. Now, why is that? There's two major mahalachim among the Rishonim. Is it because Bavel was a place of Torah? So in that case, maybe it only applies as long as Bavel is a great place of Torah. Or maybe it is because Bavel was the country where Hashem sent the Jewish people into Golus there by the first Korban, and therefore we have to stay there until further notice. So the Rebbe analyzes in some detail in that Sicha, that was Rabbi Yehuda's position, basically. He's saying, in other words, in effect, the same way as Eretz Yisrael is the chosen land of Hashem, the same way Bavel is to a certain extent the chosen land as well, because Hashem chose it for our Golus. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds, you're not even allowed to leave it to go to Eretz Yisrael. What about Rav and Shmuel and the various others? They went there for a while. It's one thing. They say, for example, you want to leave Bavel to go to Eretz Yisrael because you're going to learn Torah on a higher level over there. By all means, Rabbi Yehuda has no problem with that. But to go and leave Bavel permanently to settle in Eretz Yisrael, where Bavel, again, is supposed to be, according to Rabbi Yehuda's way of looking at it, the land that Hashem chose as the place for all Golos until Mashiach comes, then Rabbi Yehuda holds, you can't do that. And that's why he says you can't leave Bavel for Eretz Yisrael. Meanwhile, the other Chachamim, as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, are going to say you can't leave Bavel for Eretz Yisrael, fine. But to leave Bavel for other countries, that not. Either because, again, Bavel has greater Kedusha than other countries in the sense that you have great yeshivas over there, or just because the country of Bavel itself has that specialty that Hashem chose it as the place of the Jewish people's Golus. In a similar vein, by the way, there's an interesting discussion in that connection, when you have other countries that are tremendous makom Torah, each in different places throughout all of our long Golos, there have been different countries that have been a great makom Torah. According to that way of looking at it, maybe that concept would apply to them also. Maybe, for example, in a time when Poland, for example, was the great makom Torah of the world, maybe you were also to leave Poland to move to other countries. Maybe in a time now when to a certain extent America is a great makom Torah, then you're not allowed to leave it for other countries. Lakewood, yeah, whatever, yeah, Crown Heights, yeah, maybe, okay. The Gemara continues, so here, actually, this part that I mentioned before, I mentioned it from the Medrash, but it is actually here in the Gemara, I had forgotten. The pasuk continues, with Tzvoi Se Ba'ilas HaSod, Hashem is beswearing the Jewish people by the deer and the gazelles of the field. So why that comparison? Means Hashem is telling the Jewish people, if you keep this series of shavuos mutav, then good. And if not, then I'm going to make your flesh hefker like the deer and like the gazelles, and you're going to end up being preyed on by the nations. So again, the idea being that these shavuos are meant to preserve the Jewish people throughout all our time in Golos. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, an interesting explanation from Abshamshin Rafal Hirsch on the pasuk Haninu Goyim Amoy. At the end, you have the song of Hazinu, the whole long description of how it's going to be with us Jewish people throughout all the long time of Golos, and how Hashem eventually is going to have Rachmanos on us. So at finish, you have the pasuk at the end, Haninu Goyim Amay. Now Rashi explains in the pasuk that it means something like that at that time the Goyim will praise us Jews and realize and say, look how faithful they were to Hashem throughout all this long bitter searing Golos. Rav Hirsch has an interesting explanation on it. He says, and it fits very well with our Gemara over here, that Hashem beswore them not to treat us too harshly, that he explains, how ninu goyim ame, this is Hashem telling the nations, even while the Jewish people are among you, how ninu, make them happy. Because realize, kidama vadav yikon, menokam yashav letzarev, v'chipa ad masa ame, Hashem is eventually going to take revenge for what you do against the Jewish people. So during the time when they're among you, make sure, how ninu, make them happy, don't oppress them. In that connection also, there's a very powerful sicha from the Rebbe from Shabbos Parshas Mishpatim. I think Tavshin Dalad Mem or Mem Hey, I don't remember. That year Shabbos was on Chof Dalad Shvat. The Rebbe gave a fiery sicha over there there's a nevuah of Zechariah from Trey Osir gives a nevuah. He says where he says a malach is going around and then reports to Hashem. He says, "I see the whole world is at peace." And then the malach says to Hashem, "When are you going to already have Rachmanus on Yerushalayim? It's already been desolate for 70 years." And then the pasuk continues. Hashem says, "Yeah, kinesi letzion v'Yerushalayim kinog doila. I'm very zealous for Yerushalayim. V'ketzef gadol ani kotzef ala goyim ashananim." And he says, "I'm very angry at these peaceful, complacent goyim." So the Rebbe gave a long sicha over there explaining why would Hashem be angry at the goyim? They're not allowed to be at peace. And the gist of the answer was, yes, they should realize as long as we are in golos and suffering among them, hayitochen that they should feel peace. They have a mitzvah among their shev mitzvah nenoyach of tsar balachayim, to avoid tsar balachayim. They should realize the tsar that we have among them, and they should not feel a moment's peace about it, but rather they should be doing whatever they can to help us out of that. Then the Rebbe went on to say, it's also hayra for us. We ourselves can't be complacent in golos either. If we are, then yeah, that gives them an excuse to say, well, why should we be more worried about it than you Jews are? But so it was a fascinating and then a fiery sicha from definitely worth looking up. I think it was from Tavshin Dalad Mem. So yeah. That's what it is. In other words, we have to be dissatisfied with all of this that we're saying that we're forced to remain in Bavel and we're forced to remain in Chutz La'aretz and all and consider it's not the normal way it should be. Which brings us to Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola for Chavav Tevis. So the Rebbe talked in many sichas about the part of it but that we have to be poil on the Umas Ha'Olam to keep Shev Mitzvos from Noyach. In one sicha, for example, the Rebbe was talking about that it's the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Geula, so therefore we have to put effort into bringing the Umas Ha'olam to keep the Shev Mitzvos Noyach, and that prepares the world for Mashiach. And in another sicha, then the Rebbe was talking about we have to be poil on them to be involved in tzedakah. And we see that nowadays it is much easier to get them involved in tzedakah, whether it's talking about tzedakah among themselves, among the Goyish nation themselves, or to us Jewish people. You see all this foreign aid and so on and so forth. And you have, after all, there's a whole discussion in halacha to what extent are b'nei noyach chayiv in tzedakah b'chol. It's not one of their seven mitzvahs officially, but is it something that they're chayiv in? And then you also have, on the other hand, you have a Gemara in Bava Basra that darshans on the pasuk for Chesed Lo'umim Chatos, where the Gemara brings different explanations about why it means when the Goyim do tzedakah of a Chesed, it's really not so good. We have at the end of Perek Aleph Tanya, they're doing it to Yisyarbo, they're doing it only to pride themselves, etc. But then the Gemara finishes off over there with what Riachim and Zakai says, that the comparison is just like a Chatos is Mechaper for the Jewish people, so is tzedakah Mechaper for the Umas Ha'olam. Meaning that after all, in other words, there's an importance in convincing them to give tzedakah. And it is a schust for them, and again, it helps prepare the world for the times of Mashiach. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos, so we started talking about speaking of our relationship with Goyim. We started talking about the dinim of Amir la'akum. So far, the basic rules we set are: you're not allowed to directly tell the goy, you're not even allowed to hint to him before Shabbos or on Shabbos to do after Shabbos. There are times when he does it himself, and you have to prevent him from doing it. We said that if there's going to be a major loss, then you're allowed to call a goy over there, and he'll realize on his own what he has to do. So now you have also, if it's not an actual malacha, if it's something that's only also d'rabbanan, so then if there's a tzodach mitzvah involved, or if there's something that where there's some kind of sickness involved, or where people might get sick, then you're allowed to tell a goy to do. An example would be that people sometimes will send a goy to bring something for the Shabbos meal even when there's no eruv, but it's really only b'shas adchak. But you can't even do it. You can't even have him do it. Bring it from outside the tchum. But other examples of that, for example, are that when it's cold, you would be allowed to ask a goy to turn on the heat because everybody is considered cold and uncomfortable when it comes to heat. When it comes to cold and heat. So that kind of thing, then you are allowed to actually have a goy do for you because that's considered bimkoim choyli. You have the same thing when it's hot and you need the air conditioner on, would be a similar kind of thing. On the other hand, for example, let's say when it comes to turning on a light on Shabbos, there it's actually, if there's no light in the room at all, then you're actually not allowed to. Because then you're, it's not just a matter of that you're asking the goy or hinting the goy to do something for you, but there's also the problem of having hana from his malacha on Shabbos, and you can't do that. So they're actually, if he's turning on the light and he's not actually going to be benefiting from him, from it himself, you can't allow him to turn it on, but if he does, you would actually have to leave the room. On the other hand, if there was light in there and he's just turning on another light that makes it brighter, then you have more of a heter to stay there and use that light, and vice versa. If the light is on, like in your bedroom or something, and you want to hint to a goy to turn it off, you're not directly having hana from his malacha. It's the other way around. You're having hana from the fact that the light won't be there. So that would also be something that's allowed, and you'd be allowed to hint to him to come and do that.